Okay, well, thank you so much for being here tonight for the Nature and Neighborhoods Nature Education and Outdoor Experiences Grants Workshop. We really appreciate your time being here and your interest in the grants. Like I said, my name is Krista Gardner. I'm the program manager for the Nature and Neighborhoods Community Grants, and Juan Carlos introduced himself, as well as Oriana Quackenbush, who is our assistant for the community investments team. And this is the team that really works on these grants. I'll go ahead and pass it over to Juan Carlos to give you a little bit of context about where the funding for this program comes from, and also some of the policy direction that's been given to us by Metro Council.
Thank you, Krista. So the Nature in Neighborhoods Outdoor Experience and Education Grant Cycle, the one that we are starting today, is funded by the 2018 Natural Areas Levy, which was a funding measure that Metro Council referred to the voters in 2018, and the voters approved it in the ballot. And this is a five-year levy that will be providing funding for Metro programs from 2018 to 2023. The levy allows us to fund a variety of different programs. It's a very flexible funding mechanism in terms of the kinds of projects that could be funded through the levy. And I will talk a little bit about the difference between this and the bond measure that was approved recently in a slide in a few minutes. So we always like to thank the voters, because the voters are the ones who approved this tax that will then is funding these programs. And a big focus of this grants, Nature and Neighborhood Grants, and of the work of Metro is diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. The first levy that started this this programming was approved in 2013, and that levy included language about focusing these programs that Metro Parks and Nature was proposing on people of color and people of low incomes, and connecting these communities with parks and natural areas throughout the metro region. In 2016, the Metro Council approved a strategic plan to advance racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, which provided a much stronger and more strategic direction for Metro to incorporate racial equity into all aspects of our work. That strategic plan has five goals, which address the things that all of Metro departments do. One of them is convening. You know, we convene partnerships and regional conversations. So we want to bring racial equity to those regional conversations. The second thing we all departments do is we engage with the community, we engage with the public, and we want to make sure that we make a clear effort to engage people of color who traditionally have not been as engaged in the work that Metro does. The third thing we all departments do is we hire people. We hire employees, so we want to make sure that the way that we do things increases the racial diversity of the region, or of our workforce, to better reflect the diversity of the region. The fourth thing all of our departments do is to provide safe and welcoming spaces. So we want to make sure that all people from all racial backgrounds feel welcome in our spaces. And the fifth thing that we all do is allocate resources, including programs like this, which allocate funding resources for different programs. And we want to make sure that those are set up in a way that they benefit all communities, but especially communities of color that have been traditionally not funded with these efforts. And all of that, it was this racial equity strategy was adopted because of the objective, measurable reality that communities of color have a lot more challenging outcomes in any areas of social well-being. And we know that if we, as a government agency, we have the obligation to make sure that all communities benefit from our programs in an equitable way, and not just one community benefiting more than the others, which has been traditionally what has happened. So that's why Metro Council adopted this racial equity strategy. And one of the things that the strategy mandated for all departments was that each department create its own action plans because the big racial equity strategy is about those five things that all of Metro does, but that doesn't talk about the specific work that each department does. So in 2019, about a year ago, the Parks and Nature Department adopted our READY plan, our Racial Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Action Plan, which dives more deeply into the kind of racial equity actions that we are taking specifically in our department, which include making sure that our grants and programs have that racial equity focus to reduce the disparities and advance equitable outcomes for everybody. So now, as you know, in the fall, in November, the voters of the region approved a bond measure that was referred by Metro Council to the ballot, and the voters approved it. And this is a new bond measure that replaces an existing one. And this bond measure is going to generate a significant amount of resources for Metro, about $475 million. And all of the programs, all of the projects that are done under this bond measure have to also have that racial equity and climate resiliency requirements. This is the new thing that Metro Council put in that language that was referred to the voters. So everything that we do with a bond funding is going to have to meet those two requirements. We as staff are in the process of interpreting that language that was approved and using that as the basis for creating programming, including a new grants program, which will be a capital grants program. Those funds are going to be about $35 million over the life of the bond, which we estimate 10 to 15 years. So it's going to be a significant amount of resources that this team is going to be distributing in the community. What's important to remember, as I'm sure most of you know, is the kind of projects that the bond can fund, which are very specific. They have to be capital projects. So any bond-funded project has to result in a capital asset that's publicly owned. It could be owned by a government entity or by a special district, by a school, but it has to be owned by some kind of public entity. So this grants program that we are going to be starting, the outreach for is going to seek partnerships of organizations, public and private organizations and groups that are come together with an idea of creating a capital asset in mind that connects people with nature or makes restoration improvements or other kinds of improvements to connect people with nature and to restore land. And so we're going to be doing a lot of outreach and a lot of setting up of those projects. So we estimate, perhaps too optimistically, that we might have a grant cycle, the first grant cycle of these bond funds in about 2 years. We hope we're able to deliver on that. We'll do our best to do that. The reason for that is that a lot of people have great ideas for projects, but it takes a long time to get those projects to the point where they're eligible for this funding. They have to be well-developed projects at that point, and there's a lot of outreach and support that those projects need before they get to that stage. So we wanted to let you know, so stay tuned. You will be providing updates along the way, but we're very excited to have this funding opportunity that will be available as soon as possible, again, and we think in about a couple of years.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the basics of this particular grant, which is the Nature Education and Outdoor Experiences grant. And if you want to follow along, there are printed copies of the handbook in the front. So I'll be following along some of the pieces that are from the handbook. Also on the front area, we have some things that are additional materials for you. For example, sample applications of successful projects, lists of projects from the last four cycles that were successful, as well as what Juan Carlos was talking about earlier. We have a couple of pieces of information about the diversity, equity, inclusion strategy, as well as the Parks and Nature Equity Action Plan. And then finally, if you do want to get into the details of the bond and the potential bond grants, capital grants, we do have the legislation printed up here, because the legislation really is our guiding document for what we will develop for those capital grants. So all of those materials will also be available on our website. Many of them are available today. The rest I'll put up tomorrow. So with that, I'm just going to walk us through some of the basics of the program. And then at the end, I'll walk through what it would look like to actually submit an application using our online system, which is Zoom Grants. So the basics, we have this year $700,000 available for these Nature Education and Outdoor Experiences grants. We allow for up to $100,000 for 2 years. About half of the grant proposals that come in, or about half of those that are funded, are smaller grant dollar amounts of around $25,000 to $30,000. We do get a lot of grant applications for that $60,000 to $70,000 range, and then we get a very few amount of applications that are at that $100,000 level, and very few that are funded at that $100,000 level. That's particularly competitive. For these grants, these are competitive grants. We've had a range of everything from 35 applications for when we only had $200,000 to award, up to 74 applications submitted, and generally we award around 15 grants per year. Partnerships is particularly important for these grants. That's one of the reasons I had you introduce yourselves at the beginning of this meeting, is that we're always looking for active partnerships as part of these grants, and so trying to find what skills you can leverage from different organizations and how you can really build a collaborative and comprehensive program using those partners. In terms of minimum requirements, who may apply is nonprofits, community organizations, religious institutions, even private individuals. Generally speaking, we ask for anyone who does not have a 501c3 status to get a fiscal agent to provide that financial oversight. Finances, we ask for a one-to-one match. That means if you're asking for a $25,000 grant, we'll expect you to have $25,000 that you'll contribute either in kind or in cash. And often these grants are in kind match using a volunteer's. So a volunteer rate is using the independent rate of around $25 per hour, or if you're using professional services, say an engineer or an architect, that you can use that person's professional professional rate, which is often quite higher. The location of these grants is within the Portland metro area, so if you're not familiar with the urban growth boundary, that's available on our website. The reason that that is our boundary for these grants is because that is where the funding for these grants comes from. It's from the taxpayers that live within that boundary. The actual event or program can occur outside of the boundary, but the main beneficiaries of the grant must be residents of the Portland metro area. And we do take that geographic distribution pretty seriously. We always get fewer applications from, say, Clackamas County or from Washington County than we do from, say, the central Portland area. And so those applications in the central area have more competition because of the concentration of programming that occurs in that central area. The purpose of these grants is then to support and create partnerships in local communities that improve water quality, fish and wildlife habitat, and connect people with nature. And there are three primary goals: cultural equity, environmental equity, and economic equity. And those refer back to the Parks and Nature Equity Action Plan that Juan Carlos referred to earlier. So you'll see a lot of similarity if you were to look at that document and the goals of this program. So cultural equity: people of all races, and traditions connect with nature and with one another in the parks, in the region's parks and natural area. And I'll give a couple of examples of programs that have been funded in the past. So Nadaka Nature Park is a newer park in between Portland and Gresham. It used to be a camp, and it was converted into a park about 5 years ago. And it's a nature park. And with having a new park, they needed some programming. And so they came to us for a grant for both nature education programming as well as for what they call the ambassador program. So they're like community rangers that come and welcome people into this new park space. And they have several events. This is their main event in the summer.
How much, Krista, how much did that, was the grant?
I believe this grant was around
$60,000.
Another example of a grant in this category is the Portland Harbor Community Coalition. And so the Portland Harbor Community Coalition focuses on the Willamette River and educating folks about the Superfund sites in that area. They put on three main events with the partners that are listed on the slide. One was water ceremonies with the Native American community. Another was the Russian Youth Conference and connecting Russian-speaking youth to potential jobs in the environmental sector, especially in Superfund cleanup. And then the third was with Get Hooked, which is an organization that works with people getting to learn fishing, was to put on a hip-hop festival in Cathedral Park called the Illamette. Under the goal of environmental equity, communities of color in Greater Portland enjoy the benefits of conserving land, air, and water, and equitable access to safe and welcoming parks, trails, and natural areas. Communities enjoy learning about, helping restore, experiencing, and connecting with nature and the region's natural areas. A couple of examples of that are Verde has a program where they work with youth through the Hacienda CDC Expresiones program. And through that program, they do a series of nature education and in after-school care, as well as field trips to places such as Ridgefield, Whitaker Ponds, Oxbow and a few others. And that has everything to do with nature education for things like their birding club, which is called Club Aves, to education about other environmental fields such as the solar system. And then another example is ecology in the classroom and outdoors. And this is they work in the schools primarily, and this particular program was for working in the schools in the North Clackamas School District. And they meet with 37 different classrooms four times and then bring the children out to a field trip in a natural area to learn hands-on about nature. And the third goal is economic equity, in which communities of color prosper economically from the business of parks and nature in Greater Portland. And a couple of examples of those are the Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, or otherwise called POIC, or Rosemary Anderson High School. They collaborate with Friends of Trees to do an urban forestry program with their youth, where they teach the youth that are in their alternative high school about seeing some head nods over there. You guys might be able to describe it better than I do, about pruning and tree planting and tree care, as well as to do some on-site restoration projects. Another example is Tualatin Riverkeepers has a program in collaboration with Muslim Educational Trust and Centro Cultural, also an urban forestry program where they teach their students about different jobs and careers and environmental subject matter, primarily focused on urban forestry. And then they have internships within different nonprofits and institutions for those students. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the detailed work of submitting a pre-application. So first of all, I wanted to say that Juan Carlos and I and Oriana are all available to help with your application process. So Oriana wrote on the board kind of the pathway to get to individual meetings, but we do offer individual meetings if you are interested either in talking to us on the telephone or meeting in person to talk about your particular idea and how it may or may not fit with these grants. We're able to do that because we have a peer review committee. That means our review committee is the one that is recommending the grants to the Metro Council for decision making. And the review committee is made up of other individuals who work at nonprofits, community-based organizations, culturally specific organizations, or environmental organizations. And so they're the ones who are reviewing your pre-applications according to evaluation criteria. And the evaluation criteria corresponds really closely with the five main questions that you'll be asked as part of your pre-application. So project narrative and goals. This is your opportunity to really make the case of why your program is important and relevant. Why does it meet the mission or the values of your own organization, and how does it meet the purpose and goals of the Nature and Neighborhoods grants? Partnerships, like I said, partnerships are really important for this particular grant, so we'll be looking for active partnerships and partnerships that really leverage the skills of each individual partner. So if your organization provides one sort of service, but you want to have a program that also provides another type of service, that you're looking for a partner who can help fill that gap. We look at not only those kind of sharing of skills, but also are you sharing of resources? Is the other organization bringing match dollars, or is the other organization also receiving some of the grant funding? And how are you doing that financial sharing as well? Organizational preparedness is really whether your organization is prepared to take on this project and whether this project is feasible given your skills, knowledge, and experience. And if you don't have the skills, knowledge, and experience to complete this particular program or project, who are you bringing on, or what organization are you bringing on as partners or a paid consultant to be able to complete the project? We're really looking for project completion. That's important for a grant program. And then diversity, equity, inclusion. The questions are about cultural competency as well as about, in terms of equity, who is designing the program, by whom and for whom is often what we say is designing the program or implementing the program. And then finally, as I mentioned, location and program reach. This is a metro area-wide program, so we are looking for geographic distribution in the grants that are awarded. The timeline, so the grants are due on January 29th. We say 4 p.m. The grants are actually not due until midnight, but I'm not going to be at my desk at 11 p.m., and so often people have urgent questions within the last hour, sometimes within the last 10 minutes. So I want to make sure that Juan Carlos or myself or Oriana are at our desk to answer any of your last minute questions. Yeah. So know that it's open until midnight, but if you have those last minute urgent questions or technical difficulties, we go home at regular business hours. If you are asked to submit a full application, that full application would be due on April 7th. You would be told in May that you were being recommended, that review committee was recommending your grant proposal for a grant from the Metro Council. Metro Council would make their decision hopefully in June. And then the start date is July 1st, which is the beginning of our fiscal year. So I'm just going to walk you through what it actually looks like to submit one of these pre-applications. So if you go to our website, which is oregonmetro.gov/grants, and on the left-hand side you see a listing of all of the grants and resources that are available at Metro.
I'm sorry, point of clarification. You just said backslash?
Backslash grants.
Because that's a forward slash. So is that different than what you just said? Just clarifying.
No, the same.
Is that a forward slash? That's all I was asking about. So should that be a backslash as well?
That, whatever that is fine.
That's the correct.
That's the correct one. Okay, yeah. Whatever that's.
Sorry.
That's all right. So on the website, you have on the left hand side you have all of the grants and resources that are available. If you click on under Nature Grants, under Nature Education Grants, you'll come up to this page, and right here underneath on the gray. Is a little button that says apply now, and you would apply there. It's not shown on this page, but if you go down a little bit further in that gray box, there is the button that allows you to sign up for individual phone calls or individual meetings. So in the same area. I do also like to point out that we do have many grant resources that are available at Metro, including sponsorships, for example, for events or fundraising galas or fundraising dinners. We have several sponsorship programs for things like bringing communities of colors into Metro parks or for smaller transportation projects. And so I do encourage you to explore this a little bit, explore this page a little bit to see if there are other things that might be applicable to the work that you do. I also do always like to plug our enhancement grants. Our enhancement grants are mitigation funds for the solid waste transfer stations that we have in the Portland metro area. And we have about 10 of them. And so around each one of those, we have community grants that are some of our least competitive grants. And so they, if you happen to be working in those particular areas, I really encourage you to apply for them. So they're everywhere from Forest Grove to Oregon City and everywhere in between. So if you click that button, apply now, it will take you to a page that looks like this. This is a an online portal, which is called Zoom Grants. And you'll be taken to this program that says Metro Open Programs. And under Open Programs right now, we have the Nature Education and Outdoor Experiences Grants. And we also have the Community Placemaking Grants are due February 3rd. So they also pop up on this. As well as the Regional Travel Option Grants. They have sponsorships that are available ongoing, and so that's the other program that is open currently. From there, you would press this button, Apply. If you press the button, Preview, it'll just show you what the application looks like. So you hit Apply. If you have applied for these grants in the past, your information will auto-populate. And so the contact information will be there from whenever last time you applied for one of these grants, either to Metro or to another organization that uses the same Zoom Grants portal. I will note that you should take a look at that information just to make sure it's still accurate, and that especially down at the bottom, there is there's an important piece, which is additional contacts for this application. And that particular box is really important for communications, because we do a lot of our communications through the Zoom Grants portal, which means that we send an email through the system. This system sends it to whatever contacts are listed here. And so if you have other people who are working on your grant, please do list them either as additional contacts, or the other word that is used here is called collaborators. It does not look like an important box, but it is actually a very important box in terms of communication. The other thing I'll note about communication, and this is in your handbook as well, is that since we do use Zoom Grants as our email system, if you have an email system that likes to block things as junk, please do save notices at zoomgrants.com in your safe senders list, because otherwise you won't get the notice. So this first page is some contact information. Under these tabs, you'll just click on the pre-application questions. It'll take you here. Those first few questions are pretty basic questions. The program summary is an elevator speech, so if you could say something in one sentence or less about your program. This is an important paragraph. It's what we use in our materials to Metro Council. It's what we use in our communications materials. So do think rather carefully about how best to describe your program in a very succinct, concise way. We offer, if you have a fiscal agent, an opportunity for you to list that person there or that organization there. Program partners, which are committed or potential program partners. So if you've had in-length conversations with people and you're like, hey, yeah, we're partners, we're going to do this program together, you can put them under committed. If you want to contact an organization but you haven't had a chance to make that phone call yet, put them under potential partners. Yeah?
Do you need letters of support at this point?
No. So So the way the pre-application and full application two-phase system works is that during the pre-application, we ask basically for narrative, so making the case of why your program is important and is a good fit for this particular grant program. The second phase, if you're invited back for a full application, we ask for more detail. So we ask for a detailed budget. We ask for letters of support. We ask for what you would use for evaluation measures. We ask for a list of your activities and when you expect them to happen, things like that. So that's really the difference between the pre-application and the full application. And the pre-application, the narrative usually stands during the full application. We don't ask people very often to go into their pre-application and change their narrative. The bottom half of that page is really the most important questions. It's the essay questions, if you will. It's the questions about your narrative, your program narrative. So why is your program important? What are you planning on doing? And then your goals. How does this program fit your organization's mission or your organization's values, and how does it fit both the purpose and goals of the Nature and Neighborhoods grants? Partnerships, how are your partnerships deep or active partnerships, and what is each particular organization bringing to the table? Organization preparedness, what is your experience, skills, or knowledge that allow you to conduct this program or project, and if you don't have the skills, who are you bringing to the table that does? And then finally, the racial equity, diversity, and inclusion. How is your program being done in a culturally competent way, and by whom and for whom is the project being designed or implemented? And then finally, if you click on that last tab, document uploads. So there's two things we ask for. One is, again, going back to that question about geographic distribution and location, is a map. It doesn't have to be a sophisticated map. It could be a Google Maps map. It could be a paper map that you've taken a photo of with your phone. We're not judging you on your cartographic skills. We just want to know where your programming is happening. And then the second piece is a demographic form. So this demographic form is specifically for us to understand where our funding is going or where it's not going, and what is our outreach? How successful has our outreach been? And so this form is actually hidden from the review committee when they go in to review the grants, because it's really for our programmatic purposes. So we ask that you submit that, but understand that it's not part of your evaluation. We're asking you to state in your diversity, equity, and inclusion question and essay that information. We're just collecting this data for our own uses. Like I said, the review committee is really important to us. We really would not be able to do this program without the skills, knowledge, and experience that the review committee brings to bear in the evaluation of all of these pre-applications. It's a great opportunity if you want to learn more about what different groups are doing in the Portland metro area, or if you want to learn more about grant writing. It is a fair amount of work, because it is reviewing around, say, 50 pre-applications, and attending two meetings of 4 hours each. But it's also a great opportunity. So if you're interested, just a quick email to me telling me why you are interested in participating in the review committee, and also a a sample of your resume. And it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to go into your resume and tailor it for this particular position. We're just really looking at that for general information. And like I mentioned, application assistance, we do offer meetings and phone calls individually. Again, if you're interested in doing that, there's this, if you go on our website and you press our meet with us, it'll take you to a sign up sheet, which looks like this. And you can just sign up really easily there. And that's all I have in terms of the actual presentation. What questions do you have?